All right, so we're diving into some pretty fascinating territory today.
Sounds good.
Yeah. When you sent over the material about this Stewart v. Johnson case, I was hooked.
It's a really interesting one.
It is, right? Like a 1940 Florida Supreme Court decision.
Yeah.
And it gets at this question that, like, honestly, I don't think most people think about every day,
Right.
which is what happens when someone tries to update their will, but they kind of mess it up,
Yeah.
like legally speaking.
Yeah, they don't get it quite right.
Yeah, exactly. And then they pass away. Can that old will, can it still be valid?
That's a big question.
It is a huge question.
And it has some pretty significant implications for estate planning in general.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's what we're going to unpack in this deep dive today.
Right. And this doctrine, it's called dependent relative revocation,
Yeah.
which,
Yeah, now that sounds complicated.
yeah, it's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful, but it's like the key
It is.
to understanding
Yeah.
this whole case and why it still matters, even today, right? For anyone who's like, okay, what happens to my stuff when I'm gone?
Absolutely.
So we're talking estate planning, and that might even include you listening right now,
Right.
thinking about your own future and how you want things handled, down the line.
Right.
And in Stewart v. Johnson, the court had to deal with some pretty significant errors
They did.
in how this guy, Lot Johnson, tried to make his will.
Yeah, and they really had to work to figure out what he actually wanted.
They did, right.
Right.
So, like, how do you even start to figure that out?
Well, that's where this doctrine of dependent relative revocation really comes into play.
Okay, so let's set the stage here.
All right.
This is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah.
We have Lot Johnson, 76 years old,
Okay.
and he's got a considerable estate. So back in 1937, he had a will that everyone agreed was like legally sound.
Right.
All the cross crossed, I's dotted.
Okay.
But then a year later in 1938, he tries to create a new one. And here's the problem. This 1938 version only has one witness. His secretary signed it. But Florida law back then and still today
Right.
requires two witnesses for a will to be valid.
Yeah. So you can already see where this is going.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So immediately you're like, red flag.
Huge red flag.
Right. Big problem.
Yeah.
So now the question becomes, what happens to his estate?
Right.
Does that old 1937 will, the one that was good,
Yeah.
does that one still stand?
That's the question.
Or does his widow end up inheriting everything
Right.
through what's called intestacy? Like
Yes.
as if he died without a will at all.
Exactly. Which may not have been what he wanted at all.
Right. And that's the big question here.
Right, because it seems like he went to the trouble of making a new will.
Yeah, why even bother?
Exactly right. Like, why go through that whole process if you're happy with the way things are?
Yeah, and the court actually, they noted that both wills had like a similar general scheme
They did.
for how he wanted to distribute his assets.
Yeah. So it wasn't like he was trying to completely change
No,
everything.
he wasn't doing a 180,
Right. Exactly.
but he was making some adjustments, and it makes you wonder what were those adjustments and why were they important to him?
Exactly. And that's something that we don't really have the answer to.
Right, we're left to speculate.
Yeah, we have to look at the evidence and kind of piece things together.
Yeah, so we have this valid 1937 will, but then this 1938 will, which isn't valid.
Right, because it only had the one witness.
Right, and that witness requirement is really strict.
It is, it's there for a reason.
It's not just some random formality.
Right, exactly.
So can you talk about that a little bit? Like, why is it so important?
Sure. So those formalities, like having the right number of witnesses, they're there to protect the person making the will, the testator.
Okay.
They help ensure that the testator is signing the will voluntarily
Okay.
and that they understand what they're doing.
So no one's like forcing them or tricking them.
Exactly. It's all about making sure their wishes are truly represented.
Okay, that makes sense.
So without the required witnesses, that 1938 document,
Yeah.
it's just a piece of paper. It doesn't have any legal weight as a will.
Right. It's like writing your wishes on a napkin.
Pretty much,
Not
yeah.
going to hold up in court.
Nope.
Okay, so Lot Johnson passes away.
Right.
1938 will's there, but it's not valid. 1937 will's there. That one's valid.
Right.
And initially, it seems like they might go with intestacy.
Yeah, like he didn't have a will at all.
Right. And for those who might not know what intestacy is,
Sure.
it basically means that the state steps in
Right.
and they have these default rules
Yeah.
about who gets what based on family relationships. And
Exactly.
in this case, it would have meant that his widow would have gotten a much bigger share.
Yeah, more than what was in either of the wills.
Right. So that creates a whole other layer of complexity
It does.
because now you have the people who were named in the 1937 will,
No,
they're not too happy about this.
they're thinking, wait a minute. this isn't what he wanted.
Yeah, we were supposed to get something.
Exactly. He had a plan, and this isn't it.
Right. So they take legal action.
They do.
And they're trying to get that 1937 will recognized mm-hmm. as the valid one.
Right, even though he tried to revoke it.
Right, with that 1938 will.
Yeah.
And this is where dependent relative revocation comes in.
This is it. This is the crux of the case.
Yeah. So the court, the Florida Supreme Court,
mm-hmm.
they have to figure out, can they basically undo
right.
that attempt to revoke the 1937 will?
Because it was tied to this new will that didn't work.
Right. Because if that new will was valid,
yeah.
then the revocation of the old one would make sense.
Exactly.
But the new one's not valid. So it's like a domino effect.
It is. It all falls apart.
Right. So is that basically what dependent relative revocation is about?
Yeah, that's the core idea.
Okay, so the court's saying, hold on. Lot Johnson only canceled his old will because he thought this new one was going to work.
Mm-hmm.
If the new one doesn't work,
yeah,
maybe we shouldn't let that cancellation stand.
Yeah, right. And it all comes down to intent.
Intent, right. Like, what did he really want?
Exactly. And that's a tough one to figure out after someone's gone.
It is. It's like they're trying to read his mind.
Yeah, but that's why the evidence is so important.
Right. So what kind of evidence did they have in this case?
Well, luckily they had a carbon copy of the 1937 will.
Oh, wow. So they could actually see what it said.
Yeah. They knew exactly what the terms were, who the beneficiaries were, all the details.
It's big help.
It was huge. And they also had testimony from the witnesses to the 1937 will.
Okay.
And from the attorney who drafted it.
So they could confirm that everything was done by the book.
Exactly. That it yeah. was a legally sound document.
Okay, so they could prove that that 1937 will was good to go.
Yep, all the boxes were checked.
And then what about the 1938 will? Did they look at that at all?
Oh, absolutely. They compared the two wills very carefully.
Okay.
And they noticed that there were some significant similarities.
Okay.
In terms of the overall plan for how he wanted his assets distributed.
So it wasn't like he was trying to disinherit anyone or make drastic changes.
No, it seemed like he wanted to tweak things a bit.
Right, maybe update some beneficiaries or amounts.
Possibly, yeah.
But the core structure of the plan was the same.
Right, which suggests that his intentions hadn't fundamentally changed.
Okay, that makes sense.
And there's another important point.
Okay.
Both wills left a significant portion of his estate
mm-hmm.
to people who weren't his direct heirs.
Okay.
Like a foster daughter and other individuals.
So not just his wife.
Right, which is interesting because if he had died without a valid will,
yeah.
his wife would have inherited the bulk of the estate.
Right, that's what intestacy would have dictated.
Exactly.
So that suggests that he didn't want that to happen.
It does.
He had a different plan.
Right, he wanted certain people to benefit from his estate.
And the court also heard from his attorney.
They did.
Who said that Lot Johnson never said anything about wanting to die intestate.
Right, like he never expressed that desire.
So it seems like he always intended to have a valid will in place.
Exactly, he wanted to control how his assets were distributed.
Yeah, so all of this evidence together,
mm-hmm.
it paints a picture of what he probably wanted.
Right.
Even though he messed up with that 1938 will.
Exactly, and that's where this doctrine comes in.
Right, so the majority of the court, they said, okay, the revocation of that 1937 will, it was conditional.
Mm-hmm.
It depended on that 1938 will being valid.
Right.
And since it wasn't,
yeah,
they revived the 1937 will.
I did.
And said, this is the one that goes to probate.
Right. So the terms of that 1937 will were carried out.
Okay. So they basically undid the revocation.
Exactly. They said it was like it never happened.
Wow. That's pretty powerful.
It is. It shows how much weight the court gives to intent.
Right. They really want to honor what the person wanted.
Absolutely. Even if there were some technical errors along the way.
Yeah. And they specifically disagreed with the lower court.
They did.
Which had said that the revocation was like clear and unequivocal.
Right, like there was no doubt about it.
And they're like, no, no, no. You have to look at the intention behind it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said that just because you physically revoke a will
right.
doesn't mean it's automatically done.
Exactly. There has to be a clear intention to revoke it.
Okay.
And that intention can't be based on something that fails to happen.
Right, like that new will being valid.
Exactly.
It makes sense.
Yeah.
So everyone on the court agreed that the 1937 will should be upheld.
They did.
But there were some concurring opinions.
Right.
So that means they had some different thoughts.
Yeah, about how they got to that decision.
Right, about the reasoning behind it.
Exactly.
So what were some of those concurring opinions?
Well, Justice Brown, he agreed with the outcome.
Okay.
But he raised a really important point.
Okay.
About the evidence.
Oh, okay.
He said that courts need to be really careful
yeah.
when they're using this doctrine of dependent relative revocation.
Okay.
they need to scrutinize the evidence very carefully.
Right, like make sure it's really strong and reliable.
Exactly, especially when they're trying to prove the contents of an older will.
Yeah, especially if the original document is gone.
Right, like in this case, they had that carbon copy, which was really helpful.
Lucky break.
But what if they hadn't had that?
Yeah, what if they only had people's memories?
Right, and memories can be unreliable.
Yeah, people forget things or misremember things.
Exactly, and that's what Justice Brown was worried about.
That someone could manipulate the situation.
Yeah, or that the court might reach the wrong conclusion.
Right, because they're working with incomplete information.
Exactly.
So it's not just about this abstract legal principle.
No, it has real-world consequences.
Yeah, it highlights how important it is to have a clear estate plan.
Absolutely.
And to make sure it's done correctly.
Yes, your eyes cross your head, all of that.
Yeah, because if you don't...
Things can get messy.
Things can get really messy.
And it might not end up the way you intended.
Exactly. So what are some of the key takeaways from this case?
Well, I think the biggest one is that the courts really do try to honor the person's intent.
Okay.
Even when there are mistakes.
Right. They want to make sure that the person's wishes are carried out.
Exactly. And this doctrine of dependent relative revocation.
Yeah.
It's a tool that allows them to do that.
Okay, so it's like a safety net in a way?
It can be, yeah. It gives the court some flexibility.
Okay, and it shows that having a valid will is crucial.
Absolutely.
But also that making sure your will is up to date.
Right.
And accurately reflects your wishes.
Yes, because things change over time.
Yeah, your circumstances change. Your relationships change.
Exactly, and your will needs to reflect those changes.
Okay, and if you're not sure how to do that...
Talk to an attorney.
Yeah, get some professional help.
Don't try to do it yourself.
Right, because you might end up with a situation like Lot Johnson.
Exactly, where your will isn't valid.
Yeah, and then the court has to step in and try to figure things out.
And that can be a long and expensive process.
Yeah, so it's better to be safe than sorry. Well, this has been a really insightful deep dive.
It has.
I think we've covered a lot of ground.
We have.
And I hope our listeners have a better understanding now.
Me too.
Of this doctrine and why it matters.
It's a fascinating area of the law.
It is. It's complicated.
Yeah.
But it's so important.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
And until next time.
Yeah.
Keep those estate plans updated.
Absolutely.
And we'll see you on the next deep dive.
All right.
Bye.